Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
How are you, Dr. Paul?
I'm doing fine, and restless night last night. I had to listen to a speech that did not make me happy.
You did a little tweeting last night, too, didn't you?
Yeah, a little bit. All fun and games, though. And I know you watched it because we were working together. You type faster than I do. I can talk fast, but I can't type fast. So. But no, we did a little bit of that, and it keeps you on your toes. And I think we had some good responses from it, and
yeah.
People want to know. But today we want to do some more reassessing. Do we have to backtrack? Can we all of a sudden change our tune this morning and say, hey, you know, it wasn't all that bad. It's the same old stuff. At least he didn't order the bombing of Moscow or something like that. And he didn't declare war against China. So, and we haven't invaded North Korea yet, and maybe he didn't even mention Iran. Maybe he's getting soft on Iran. Who knows what? But basically, I just want to go over a little bit and dissect this out. Obviously, both you and I have not had too much pleasure in listening to or believing there's much good in there. And like our title of our program on the program today is it's more of the same, and ultimately the goal is to protect the empire. But I think the political bottom line that really is going to cause the chaos is that the deep state won, mm-hmm. and Trump really has told us where he stands. And I think when Bannon was let go, when he left, we knew that would happen. So this, my first reaction to the political ramifications of this, the deep state won, and that they are very, very powerful to be able to do this. And because, you know, Trump at the beginning of his speech says, you know, this is what I believed in, and, you know, this is what I would hope for, but I had to change my mind when reality set it. The reality might be, and you might comment on that, the reality is that I can't be president very long. These people are tough, you know, and you got to know how to make a deal. And it's almost like he had to make a deal because the deep state is powerful, and they, you know, they control the media. Just look how they distorted things on the domestic conflicts that go on. So who knows? I can't believe that he had a change of heart. Some people say it is flip-flopping, but unfortunately, we don't believe he has a firm philosophic base, so it makes him maybe easier. But it's definitely a different Trump from his campaign, and it has annoyed his base. And quite frankly, I think him coming over won't solve the problem. The neocons are ecstatic. I predict that they're not going to be happy 6 months or a year from now, because who knows what's going to happen. I think both sides are going to be unhappy with them.
Yeah, absolutely. You talk about the deep state. Here's a great little quote from Foreign Policy writing about Trump coming up with his new strategy. And this is the issue you've talked about so many times, surrounding himself with generals. That's why he's so proud of it. They said that the president kept telling McMaster on Afghanistan, go back to the drawing board. I want something new. Go back to the drawing board. But he kept coming back with the same plans.
So, and finally?
And finally he capitulated, you know. He said, last night my original instinct was to pull out. But things look different from this side of the desk at the Oval Office.
Okay, but don't you think the saying, putting lipstick on a pig, might be about what he was trying to do? I don't imagine he's achieved it that much. You know, it still looks ugly. And it means that Trump has gone a long way from what he has said in the past, because there was a time when he thought we had already spent too much money and spent too much time.
Matter of fact, we have a tweet that we resurrected that Trump said, well, Ron Paul is right. We're wasting trillions of dollars in Iraq and Afghanistan. People would think that he flip-flopped again until you read the fine print back from 2011.
Oh, 2011. Here I thought, how did I manage not being on his team?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I guess that tells you something.
But he said there are three conclusions that he made that changed his minds. And I thought maybe we could have a little bit of fun, I guess is not the word for it, breaking down each one to show how wrong they are. The first one, we must seek an honorable and enduring outcome that is worthy of the military sacrifices thus far.
Yes, this came up, you know, during the presidential debates because I wanted to get the troops out of the Middle East, out of Iraq, the whole works. But the argument put up to me, I think it was Huckabee that put it up to me in a strong way. But then you'd have to admit they all died in vain. Possibly so. That possibly so. But having more people die for a lost cause isn't going to bring these other people's lives back. But I did try to put a positive spin on that by saying, well, nobody wants to die in vain, but maybe it won't be quite so bad if we learn a lesson. You know, if we could learn the lessons of the failure of our foreign policy and why there are terrorists out there anxious to do us harm and why we have lost so much and spent so much, maybe we could say, well, we woke up. We really didn't wake up. We were waking up a little bit after Vietnam, but not much. But how many people can brag about, well, I sacrificed this, my left leg, and my son gave up his life, but we saved liberty by spending all that money and killing 1 million Vietnamese and 60,000 Americans? It's just lying to themselves because it's sort of, I think the problem is the difficulty in looking like you're not patriotic, that you don't love your country. And that is overwhelming because that is what Goring said. You play on that and you can get anybody to do anything if you say that you're unpatriotic and you don't support your country. And that seems to be the case. So they're able to twist that around if you don't support the troops by sending in more troops, continuing the same policy. You'd think after 16 years, the American people at least in the 60s got tired of it before 16 years. Yeah. Of course, a lot more people were being killed, but a lot of people are being killed in these wars that we're involved in. Maybe not as many Americans, but it still is devastating, but they just keep throwing the same policy out again, just like you said, McMaster's keeps coming back, the same old policy.
Well, the second faulty conclusion that he cited to change his opinion, he said the consequences of a pullout are predictable and unacceptable. A hasty exit would create a vacuum to be filled by terrorists. And then later he said, just like what happened in Iraq.
Yeah, well, after we went in and disrupted the whole country, it got filled up. But what they don't understand is when they use our military and our effort to try to force them to live a certain way goes in, that breeds terrorists. And that's where the problem comes from. So if you have these problems, you send in more troops or perpetuate it, you're more likely to have terrorists. But, you know, I think that the word terrorist is, you know, so carelessly used because terror is, just a tactic. A terrorist, there's a lot of them. There's a lot of them out there. And there's a lot of people who will do violence to us. And that's what the real problem is that we create them by our policies, but you can't say it because you sound like you're unpatriotic, and they say you can't pull out. Well, I think you can. I think you can pull out. And one of the analogies I think we might have even mentioned last night was we finally had to pull out of Vietnam.
Yeah.
We finally pulled out, and better things came of it all. But this argument that you can't pull out, and presidents never want to lose a war. LBJ was determined that was one of his big reasons for escalating. We can't be seen as ever losing a war. So the people that are worried about terrorists, they say that the American people are with us because they're really, really terrified of being killed by a terrorist. But that isn't true. You know, there's statistics to show that isn't even high on their agenda.
Yeah.
67% of the American people say that we're sick and tired of these wars. And I often wondered, if you did a real poll of tens of thousands of people in this country and ask them in a very sincere manner, do you know of anybody that has been killed or injured or a family broken up or a consequence of these wars that have been going on for 15 years? I think you would find a lot of people. And I think it was a factor, you know, in the last election because Trump's policies were different. But then following up and asking with a question, how many of you have met a family or talked to a family that you know has lost a loved one from a terrorist who arrived here from another country?
Yeah.
What are the numbers of that? Aren't they
minuscule?
Awfully,
yeah.
Minuscule. And yet the thing of the whole thing of it is, it's this terrorizing the American people by building up this unrealistic fear. And I can think of a lot of other things that they ought to be worrying about. Maybe they ought to worry about the Fourth Amendment in this country or a few other things that affect our liberties rather than, you know, constantly using the propaganda machine, which is part of the deep state and especially the media. And they just pump out the information and they may not to get the people to really believe, at least the people just throw up their hands and go along with it. And, of course, we want to be safe. You know, that's the government's job to make us safe.
Well, the irony in Afghanistan is similar to the irony in Syria, because the U.S. is essentially fighting on the side of ISIS, even though the justification for being there is ISIS, because ISIS came to Afghanistan to fight the Taliban. Well, we spent the last 16 years fighting the Taliban, and now all of a sudden say we have to fight ISIS too. Well, the two of them are fighting as well. So, well, the third fallacy that Trump pointed out as the basis of his conclusion, you touched on it already, but he said the security threats we face in Afghanistan are immense. There are 20 terrorist groups in the area. You know, and that reminds me of the fear-mongering that Obama did when he wanted to go into Syria. You remember, oh, the Khorasan group, all of the things we've never heard since then talked about, but at the time they were built up. So that's his third, I think, mistake and conclusion.
You can't define the enemy.
Yeah.
You know, terrorism is a tactic. There are 20 groups who practice this thing of killing people, see, needlessly. You don't even know what it is. And that was the other thing about this policy. What's the exit policy? We used to hear that when I was in office. Well, they haven't given us an exit strategy. That came up a few times before they even went into Iraq. What is going to be the exit strategy? But they didn't pursue it because there is no exit strategy. There is no victory. And especially now, the victory will even be more vague. Well, we're not over there to occupy their country and have nation building. We're over there. What are we over there for? Oh, kill people.
Kill terrorists.
Kill terrorists. Well, where are the terrorists coming from? Well, they're coming all the time. Their numbers are growing because we're over there. You know, but do the people wake up? I am convinced, though, and this is what we have mentioned before, is that the American people are waking up and they know darn well what's happening. And I don't think for a minute, if the American people just had a facts on the table and said, what do you think the solution is? And whether you should just send more troops and pursue this endless no-win war or just bring our troops home. I think it would be higher than 67%. I can't imagine, other than, you know, a few people who want to follow McCain and Graham and Rubio, that might stick to their guns and say, no, what we need is more troops. Just think, I think it was up to 500,000 they sent to this little country of Vietnam.
Yeah.
It didn't work. And we had an escalation under Obama. It didn't work. It's always because they leave too soon.
Leave too soon. That's
and, of course, Trump said, we're not going to leave too soon.
Yeah.
That should scare you.
That's the only thing I say, his great new strategy. The only thing new about it is that he admitted we're no longer going to count what success looks like. We're going to discard all that old stuff. He says, we're not talk about numbers of troops or our plans for further military activities. Conditions on the ground, not arbitrary timetables, will guide our strategy from now on. So we're no longer going to say what we're going to do. We're not going to tell our enemy. We're not going to tell Congress even, certainly not the American people. We're just going to be there.
But who did he raise up to the level of running things? The generals.
The generals.
The generals have good training. And if we had the Nazis or the Japanese army attacking us, you know, maybe some good generals would really help us. But that's not it. The generals are taking over to the point where they are deciding. And that of course, came up once in our debates. And some other candidates said, well, we should always defer to the generals. Listen to the generals. They are the experts. They're not the experts in philosophy and what diplomacy is all about. And staying on a war involves diplomacy. But no, They just said that we'll let the general. What Trump is saying now is let the generals decide, and that's even more removed from it. But it's part of the secrecy thing, you know, yeah. And it's a part to protect Trump because you know, if Trump makes a decision on each one and goes badly, you know, then he gets blamed. It's sort of the way Congress. Remember how Congress would want to avoid. We really don't want to declare war. Why don't we let the president assume all the responsibility? And but I think the emphasis on the generals is out of proportion. And if you want to just deal with the military, all we have to do is talk about who has the most powerful military in the world. And everybody knows that we have the most powerful, bigger than all the rest put together. Nobody's going to attack us in a serious manner. This is all about our empire and our occupation to control things financially and militarily.
You know, I think part of what the president said was delusional. He said, we will break terrorists. We will break the terrorists' will. We will dry up their recruitment. Well, it's kind of too bad that Mike Flynn, that General Flynn is out, because you remember Flynn was quoted in The Intercept a few months ago, or I guess last year, saying the drones that we're using over there to kill terrorists are actually creating more terrorists than they kill. So too bad Flynn wasn't around to...
You know, and they've said that, there's articles out this morning that said the Trump base is unhappy.
Yeah.
The one thing they've been saying up until now is the base is solidly with him. So that's probably still up for grabs because we do know that when the early stages of the Tea Party movement, we were sort of involved in that, but then it morphed into a more Republican thing, and they didn't like the foreign policy. So Trump is sort of in the middle of that. But I know there are a lot of people because it was inviting to some libertarian-leaning individuals to say, hey, you know, maybe Trump's okay, as we had hoped for.
The rhetoric sounds good.
Yeah, you know, that we were going to have a different attitude toward Russia. But the base is probably being annoyed, at least the base that said that America first. You know, most people who understand about America first and populism, it is a different foreign policy.
Yes.
It isn't pacifism, but it's different. They just as soon protect our borders and have our troops at home and not be fighting these wars. So there may be an uprising from the base, but... I don't think he's going to pick up the support from Graham's group and the other neocons. The neocons aren't ever going to like him. Yeah. Matter of fact, most of the people in the Republican leadership, they're not even going to come over, even though they're part of this pressure to get Trump to capitulate, or bad things could happen. I just think that he's in a mess, I think, politically speaking, because he lacks a philosophy. And even if the others didn't have a solid philosophy, they usually pretended they did, you know. I am going to take care of you from cradle to grave, and everything is going to be free. So people have seen it sort of tag on to things like that.
Yeah, and you know, the Moon of Alabama had a good summary of essentially this new plan: undefined goals, undefined troop limits, undefined time limits, bash Pakistan. That's it, the summary of the whole thing. And the bashing Pakistan is not going to work that well because it was tried before. You know, they tried to withhold the money that we give their military, bribe their military every year. We do that so that we can supply our troops.
Or we have to depend on Russia.
Yeah.
To get the troops.
We've already messed up the Russia thing, so that's out of the question. We can't use that. If we push Pakistan, they'll say, okay, you can't supply your troops. Then what do we do?
Oh, for the difficulties of running an empire. Yeah. You know, what a shame. Do you want to give a final statement here as we close down?
Well, first, I do want to remind everyone about our conference
next
month. Every day I have
we're going to solve the problems there, all right?
This is the reason that we're holding this conference. These kinds of issues are the reasons why we have to get together, discuss this, to show the flag. We're here and we're debating the real issues. The other thing I would say, and this is going to sound probably crazy, but really the best hope for Afghanistan is for the Taliban to win. They'll wipe out Al-Qaeda. They'll wipe out ISIS. Taliban have never threatened the United States. They've never tried to attack us. The only thing they did that got them 16 years of war is they allowed Al-Qaeda to set up a camp, supposedly, on their territory. So if we want the Afghanis to leave us alone, the best to hope for is the Taliban to take over.
Oh, yeah, but there'd be one danger in that. That might put a damper on the drug trade, since everybody's relying on the drug trade. But the Taliban isn't necessarily pro-drug trade when they have more control.
Down. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
No, I think this is a very serious trouble. I don't think there's a significant change politically. There's lots of things going on as a consequence of this speech, but policy is the same. They're not shifting gears. They're not bringing troops home. They're going to continue to spend money. It's more vague than ever. Nobody knows at the end point. Nobody knows who's running things, because things are going to be more secret. The war isn't shrinking. The war is really moving over into Pakistan. And one reason why that bothers me is the fact that we're really, really working hard to try to get the Indians to help us, you know, and that means there will be more antagonism between India and Pakistan. They both have nuclear weapons. So our interference and intervention overseas is not a good idea for a lot of reasons. And if we're concerned, as we are, about peace and prosperity, we would all argue for the case of a non-interventionist foreign policy. And I believe that is the answer. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.